with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamers roll. www.d20radio.com.
Roll for initiative.
Roll for Initiative podcast. Guess what? We turned 25, and this is the Gen Con week, the week we've all been waiting for.
Woohoo!
Yeah, that's right.
Lucky, I gotta stay here.
I'm one of your hosts, DM Vince, along with DM Jason, DM Nick. So, let's talk a little bit about... What are we all out of our minds, Gen Con?
That's what Gen Con!
Yay, Gen Con!
I wish I was going.
Well, we offered to pick you up, buddy.
I spent the whole day preparing my calendar for the event. So, the one thing about Gen Con is that they always have the worst website in the world for trying to figure out what events are actually coming up. I mean, all the information is there, but I had to go download the Excel sheet and then, you know, dig through all the different game systems and everything. But using my Google Calendar, I've made a nice multicolored calendar of all the things I was able to get tickets for, the things that were sold out. I've just got a completely full calendar. I think I remembered to leave time for sleeping, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think sleeping's overrated.
I don't think you programmed in sleeping if I was looking in that correctly.
Have you got all of your events picked yet, or are you still deciding on some?
I have most of them picked out that I wanted to play in, but I was trying to leave enough room because you had planned that meetup that we're going to talk about in a few seconds here.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I've completely filled my dance card. I've got because the thing about Gen Con, it's my chance to play the games that I don't get to play any other time of the year.
Yeah.
So I am running one game on Friday afternoon, perfect time, nice 2 to 6. But then I've got a whole bunch of games here that I'm hoping to get in with the Dead Game Society. They're running Boot Hill and Gamma World and Top Secret and a whole lot of other games. So
yeah, they're really cool guys. Yeah.
Yeah, they said they'd even though I got in too late to get the tickets, they'd said they'd at least get me in for a couple of Boot Hill games.
Sweet.
Cool. And then, you know, there's lots of Traveler going on, which I never get to play Traveler, but, you know, at a convention maybe.
The only game I know where you can make up your character in creation, it could die.
True.
Let's see, I'll be playing some Illuminati. I'm going to play some Hackmaster.
Yay! So,
yeah, I'm going to talk to you about that because I couldn't, for my schedule, I couldn't fit in the actual sort of intro to Hackmaster, creating your character time. So I'm going to skip that. A really cool sounding game called Shay Goth from Steve Jackson Games, which are always fun.
Yeah, I saw that. I was wondering what that was.
Was that like Shay Geek, the one that they have?
Yeah, only it's goth. So, I mean, that's perfect for me because, you know, my whole goth past. A book just came in the mail, a book by Mick Mercer called Hex Files, which is this big 664-page tome of everything goth. And I'm featured in it, so, you know, that's my cred on that one.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. It was just a strange thing to get in the mail and see myself in this, like, you know, now I'm...
I don't know if I should be impressed or amazed or scared.
You should look down on me if my place in history is in a book about goth, yeah. Then the game that I'm totally looking forward to that I know nothing about called This Game Sucks. You guys heard of this?
Directed to the point. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Apparently, the point of the game is that you're trapped in some kind of role-playing game with a GM who keeps losing the plot and screwing up. I have no idea what it's going to be like, but, you know, I bought a ticket. So,
and wow. That's cool.
I did at least get a ticket for one proper first edition thing, the Legend of Stormbringer or something like that. And there's a bunch of stuff. There's like the Circle Tournament of Tournament Town, of course Tower Gygax. I mean, I gotta stop. I'm getting to but you see what I've spent my afternoon doing, right?
Spinning his head around. Yeah,
yeah, his head's like gonna explode. Player. Yeah, there I go.
Yeah, I got
don't forget to leave some time to go to the exhibition area.
Yes.
You know? Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be spending a lot of time in the vendor area, the auction hall. I got a couple games. I got a couple World of Darkness games I'll be playing in. Actually, one Buffy the Vampire Slayer game, because I'm dying to try that game out.
Cool.
So, I know it's old, but I still want to try
it. No, but it looks really
fun.
Cool. Yeah, it does look fun. So, yeah, that's the convention. Oh, and let's talk about, we have a meetup planned, so we can get that out of the way, meet some of the people from the show, and, you know.
Yeah, I put a link on the website. I mentioned it in the Dragon's Foot forums and on our Facebook page. So Thursday morning at 10 a.m., we're going to meet up over at the Omni Hotel, which is one of the hotels that's kind of on the edge of the whole thing. A lot of events go on over there. I actually picked it because after our meetup, I have a Traveler game in the Omni Hotel, so I figured, you know, do it nearby, right? But they also have a good... when you go into the Omni, when you come in through the front doors, there is a big lounge area. There's a bar and lots of seats and everything, you know, there. So it's actually a perfect place to have a meetup without being formal about it. We don't have to reserve a space. And at 10 in the morning, it should be enough room for us to kind of get together.
We do something like that at Origins with the Hyatt. They have a place called the Big Bar on 2. The big bar on the second floor, it's called. That's the name of the bar, the Big Bar on 2. So
it's good.
When
you remember
everybody,
it is.
So it's easy to remember, even when you're wasted.
It's the Big Bar on 2.
Just head to the Big Bar on 2. We'll see you there. Okay.
Yeah, so I figure if everybody comes out 10 o'clock in the morning on Thursday, that way, you know, almost none of us the listeners and everything have ever met before, you know, unless people are coming with their friends who they already know. So it's a chance to meet some new people. And if you meet somebody that you want to hang out and game with or just, you know, chill with at some point during the convention, this way you meet everybody on the first day.
Yeah.
So, you know, whoever's listening, come out and we'll be sitting there with the tables. We'll do something so you can tell it's us. We'll hold up a sign or something. I don't know.
Jason will dance on one foot. How's that?
Yeah, something like that.
We'll meet up, we'll play some pickup games, and we will have lots of fun.
Yeah, lots so come and see us.
Cool.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about the newest thing that we have going for us. And we announced it last week, so we got some really good feedback, the iPhone app.
Oh, yeah.
Nick, you said you heard some feedback, huh?
Yeah, I was just tooling around just when I got back from my little camping trip and doing prep work for the show, and I looked on dragonsfoot.org, and from the last show that we did on 24, tremendous positive feedback that we've had. Everybody saying, wow, you have an iPhone app? Oh my God, that's great. And someone saying, you know, that's the first app I'm going to get once I get my iPhone via, you know, Pony Express. but tremendous positive feedback. People just totally jazzed about it. Can't wait to get it on their iPhones if they have one. So thanks everybody
Thank you to Little Axe, because he was the first person to email in from the iPhone app to see if it was working.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he said.
Yeah, actually, what did he say?
He said, did it work? Am I the first? Yeah, he was.
First.
Congratulations.
Yeah, actually, I looked on the little contact page, and for about a day there, the call the show button wasn't working right, but I fixed it. So.
Oh, okay.
Now you can press the button, and it'll call us. And also, I figured this out because when I first started using the app, you see all of the episodes, so you can play and listen to them streaming, but I couldn't figure out how to download them because, you know, if you're in an airplane or a subway or something like that, you don't want to...
Submarine,
you know, you don't have internet access.
Coffin.
What you do is when you go to the episode list, you click on any of the episodes you're interested in. There's a little star at the top. You can click that to add it to your favorites.
Yeah.
But you can also, when you click the star, you can also press download, and it'll save it to your iPhone or your iPod Touch, so you can have it for later.
Yeah.
So that's how that works.
I grabbed mine. It was pretty cool. I was playing around with it on the iPad that I had. I mean the iTouch, excuse me. I like it. It's a little bit hard to read some of the lettering, but
yeah, I gotta change that because you know when I set up the background image, I didn't think about the white lettering. So I think we'll update it with a darker picture in the background.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So pick yours up. Go to iTunes. Give us a review. Speaking of iTunes...
And speaker reviews.
Pimping for stars. Yeah, we're pimping for stars again this week. Nick said he saw a nice comment and he wanted to read it, so go for it, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, off iTunes from Longshoreman Steve-O. This was... Yeah, all one word, too. I'm like, wow. That should be... But Longshoreman Steve-O, and this was just this past week.
Yay.
And he says, a truly magical podcast.
Aww.
Yeah, I was nice. Like, really? That's awesome. He said, excellent job, guys. I've listened to many D&D casts, but yours brings back memories and thus entertains like none other. It's fascinating to hear you discuss a magical item, a monster, or an ability and recall my group and I having talked about the same thing many years ago. Please keep up the great work. So,
okay,
Longshoreman Steve-O. You're awesome, dude. Thank you so much.
This beer is for you, pal.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually having a... I'm having Mountain Dew right now.
This home-brewed iced tea is for you, Longshoreman Steve-O.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
I'm having Mountain Dew throwback.
Yes. Anyway.
Yes.
Go visit
it's
us...
better than Mountain Dew backwash.
Ooh.
No, it's Mountain Dew made with sugar, not... corn syrup.
Yeah, the Pepsi and the Mountain Dew, they did that for a while, I remember.
Yeah, it's out right now, so anybody's going to Gen Con, it's out in 12 packs.
Just by the way, how sad is that as a marketing technique? You're going to come out with a product that's called the It Doesn't Suck This Month product?
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, guess what, kids? This month, it's pretty good stuff. Later on, we'll be back to our usual junk.
Wow. So let's head over to facebook.com/RFI podcast and you can listen to the show. You can ask questions there. A lot of people leave us some good feedback and we appreciate it. As far as the shows go, we're stopped putting the shows, the older shows there. We're just putting the current show there.
Yeah, it was just a lot of work to try to remember every place that I was updating.
Yeah.
It's fine. We'll put the current show there so anyway you can listen. But as far as older shows, it's only going up to 18 now. So. A lot of people have problems downloading some of the older episodes. They're right there for you.
You can hop over to the website. I think you can still get all the shows there, right?
Yeah, on our personal website. Yeah, we can get it still there.
Yeah, and if there's any trouble with them, you know, I'll check with our host. And of course, if you do decide to spring for the podcast app, I know it's $3, but it's very convenient to have all the old shows right there. So
definitely one purchase of the app I know is $3, but that also helps keep the lights on in the RFI mansion.
Yeah, and hey, it's a cup of coffee, right?
Yeah, definitely it's a cup of, in Manhattan it's a cup of coffee probably. Well, it's probably $8 from Manhattan, but anyway.
It'll get you a small here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Speaking about the website, we have any new articles from Todd? Yeah, we did actually, right?
The newest is very topical from last week's Inns and Taverns. Todd put up a great thing called Have a Drink on Me.
He's fast.
Yeah, he's a great writer. And now that I've got AC/DC stuck in my head, Have a Drink on Me.
Yeah.
So it's great. It goes into a lot of the stuff. It kind of expands on things that we were talking about in terms of when it's actually time to get down and make your inn or make your tavern. And he even goes to the trouble of creating one for everybody called the Cellar Dweller. And it's just superb. There's a map. There's a complete map of the of the inn. There's a menu with prices. There's NPCs. There's even a magic item.
Yeah.
Easily droppable into anybody's campaign. If you're lazy that night, just head over to the page and look at Todd's article. I thanked him personally
like
on I thanked him personally on Dragon's Foot because he does such a great job. I felt he needed a personal thank
you. Yeah, it's a fantastic article. I love it.
Do we have any other articles? I think that's about it for this week.
I just got some little bit of updates from what we talked last issue. You were talking about Julie.
Yes,
who gave us our voicemail.
Yeah.
And she did the Grimtooth traps she was talking about. I think I found it.
You did?
Yes. There was a Julie in Traps 4. On page 34, she did a trap. I'm not going to say what it is, though.
Okay.
Because we're going to... I'd like to save that when we do our traps episode. But, yeah, I looked that up. I'm like, I have all the traps book. Which one is it?
And oh, cool. Yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, August 15th. Yeah. August 15th, she'll be on the show. Well, awesome. Recording that day with us.
Great. Okay. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. I actually found a book for that show, an old Loom Pan Express book called Man Trap that I'm going to break out for it. Huh. Do you guys know Loom Pan Express? Do you remember them?
No.
At all? They were, I think they got, I don't know if they went out of business because they didn't make enough money or if the government finally caught up with them, but they were the guys that published all those books like How to Survive in Prison, How to Change Your Identity, How to Start Your Own Country, How to, you know, the Guide to Dumpster Diving, just basically everything you weren't supposed to know. They were kind of famous for, I think they were the ones that originally did the Anarchist Cookbook, unless I'm mistaken. Okay. But they had one book that was called Man Trap, and it was all about how to create traps that would kill people in real life. So it's pretty good for, I mean, don't do it in real life, but for the game, it's cool. So
we'll bring it. Interesting.
Bring that yeah, right?
Yeah.
All right.
And
go ahead, Nick.
That Inns and Taverns book I talked about from Dark Furies, Furies Publishing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, darkfuries.com. They're still around, and the book is still available. I think it's like 1995, and they have a whole bunch of other books too, like for temples and strongholds and other sorts of really cool things. So, yeah, you could still get it.
Oh, good. And you know what? One other thing on the Inns and Taverns tip. Somebody on Dragon's Foot mentioned something that I can't believe I overlooked, and that's that the article that I was looking for that I didn't think I had is actually in The Best of Dragon Volume 2, which have a couple physical copies of, so I could have just looked for that. I don't remember who said it, but thank you to the person who pointed that out.
Yes, thank you very much. RFIstaff@gmail.com is our email address. Phone in at 206-279-3272. And that'll cue us into Table Manners.
Typical. Of all the evil creatures in the world, I'd like to find one with table manners.
What, are you kidding me? I spent years cultivating the worst table manners on the planet.
Table manners. All right, table manners.
You know, I have to say before we start, I love our intro for that.
Yeah, isn't it? Guys,
I've been cultivating the worst table manners on the planet.
You know who that is, right?
Oh no,
it's from news radio. What's the actor's name? You know, the red stapler guy from Office Space.
Oh yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
yeah, that's him.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
Wow, there you go. I just found the Inns and Taverns article. It's right here in front of me. I could have read that last week. Oh well. Let's talk about experience points this week.
Yay! That's our topic of issue this week is experience points. So, how many experience points do you have, guys?
Infinite. Because I'm the DM.
I have no idea, but the other day when I was talking to somebody about their upcoming birthday and they were getting worried about getting old, I made them feel better. I said, you're not getting a year older. You're leveling up.
I never thought of it that way. Thank you, because I'm turning 40 next year.
I would have.
No, you're leveling up to level 40. So
sweet.
You're getting beat. Yeah, more powers.
Yeah.
More powers.
But I probably would have smacked you for saying that.
More powerful than Odin. Yay.
Yeah, but I feel my constitution score going down, so I don't know what that's about.
Whoa.
Let's go back to experience points.
So, experience points. There's a big old chart inside the DM guide. We're not going to, you know, go over that in great detail.
Read it. No.
No, let's not read it. Everybody knows how to dole out experience points, but how do you actually dole out the experience points is the issue this week of... Hey. Pretty much, let's skip down to the first thing here. Individual XP tracking versus party tracking. Do you individually write down each comp for each person, each thing that each person kills, or you just keep one general thing and go, meh, and just hand it out?
It's a lot easier to just sort of split the check evenly, as it were.
Yeah.
But I think people have more fun if they have the opportunity to gain more experience points for things that they themselves have done. So, you know, when it's possible, I think it's more fun to do it that way.
Yeah,
Yeah, I mean, look, when you're doling out experience points for combat, you're going to pretty much split that evenly anyhow. The only people that aren't going to earn experience points in combat are those that weren't there.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's straight from the book, that even if somebody only manages to contribute the smallest amount during a fight, the point is everybody was there, everybody was engaging the monsters or the baddies, so everybody shares the XP. It's the other things like the role-playing, which, you know, we'll talk about whether or not to give experience points for that, the right. treasure that you get, the spells that are involved. There's even a good little suggestion from Gary Gygax back in the DMG that maybe for lower-level characters that if they are killed and resurrected, that that's 1,000 experience points yes. for going through that,
yes.
those kind of things. So, you know, I think it really adds something to each individual's enjoyment of the game if you can get your own experience points, too.
Yeah, yeah. True. I usually tend to keep an individual tracker for each character, and depending on if a character... I'll just like put a check mark next to it, if depending on what character killed it, and if other characters were involved in hitting it, I'll give them partial experience for that, because I don't think it's fair that I have a player in one of my groups that just sits back and does nothing, except I stab. I stab. I follow. One of those players, you know.
Wake me when it's my turn to attack. Yeah, I've had that before.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not fair that you're playing your fighter and you're like, haha, I run in and I slash and do this and you kill everything, and then one guy's like, I stab.
You know, that's a good point. I mean, maybe if you can just award more experience points to the players that are just getting more involved. You know, so if yeah. overall, I like what you're doing. I don't think I would be able to keep up with all of the bookkeeping for that, because I've got so many things that I'm writing already.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of just maybe saying that the halfling thief was just not very involved, and the ranger was incredibly so. And I'll just remember that and just adjust maybe, you know, 10 or 20% either direction accordingly.
You know, I think I kind of do what you do, Jason. There seems to be so much to keep track of as a DM anyway. What I've been doing over the past few years is I'll, as far as like dealing with monsters, either killing them or defeating them in some way, I tend to divide the experience points evenly amongst the player characters.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's something extraordinary. Like if someone did like a one-on-one combat, you know, then I'll award full experience points of that monster kill to that one character.
Or just doing something that's really, you know, a real MVP kind of move. You
right,
know?
Sure. And, I mean, and then I'll do individual awards, like whenever somebody gets a magic item, they figure out what it is, they get the experience points for the magic item. Mm-hmm. So I kind of do a mixture of that. I mean, but as far as overall, like most of the experience points, I would assume, at least in my game, it seems like most experience points come from like monster kills.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot from magic items. But
well, you have to
it
convert.
Might be 50-50, but
you still have to convert the magic items into some type of gold before cashing it in for XP, though.
Right. No, there's XP value right there.
Yeah.
Well, there's an XP value for getting and keeping and using the magic item. I think it's generally more for actually converting it to gold.
Yeah.
And that's where I kind of differ on things, if we're going to talk about the gold thing.
All right, we'll head right into...
Before we do, I think it would be worth kind of talking about why there's XP in the game. And, you know, it's one of those things that doesn't necessarily have a real-world analog, but you need it. I mean, because at the end of the day, this is a game, and so you have to have some way to track the player's progress. So, you know, there's things that are going to happen that I don't know how you would actually make a proper analog for that in the real world, but it gives you a way to kind of say that, you know, Fofford has been doing a better job than Alaric overall and is advancing faster in his career as an adventurer.
Right. It's just a way of gauging the success of the character.
Yeah. So gold.
Yeah. Gold.
So gold. Nice transition. So gold.
That's my segues.
Gold and the experience points.
So gold.
All right. So I forgot the page exactly, but they do have a page, and I think it's DM's guide or the players. I'm not sure exactly offhand right now, but you can convert your gold into experience points, and there's different ways of doing it for different ratios for your game.
Yeah.
When should you change the ratio, and what ratios?
Well, I mean, the first thing, and this is actually laid out in one of my favorite types of passages in the book. You know, one of the reasons that I always love reading the first books, the original DMG and Player's Handbook, is for these kind of sentences. I just have to read this out here. When Gary Gygax was talking about how to, all he wanted to say was, you should adjust the amount of experience points you give based on how tough it was to get it, right?
Yeah, right.
And so he says, dividing the total adjusted hit dice equivalent of the monsters slain by the total of all total levels of experience of all characters who had a part, even if only one missile blow spell, etc., in the slaying yields a fraction, which is the measure of challenge. If the numerator is greater than the denominator, then full experience should be awarded. If the denominator is greater, then use the fraction to adjust the amount of experience by simple multiplication. Note, it may... I'm not going to finish, but I love that.
You lost me after...
I know, it's great. You totally have to sit down and, like... You have to actually like diagram out his sentence to realize that all he's talking about is that if your characters are going up against monsters that are a lot tougher than them, they get extra experience points for defeating them, and they get extra experience points for the gold that they manage to get in the treasure. And if they're going against a lot weaker monsters, then you flip it on its head.
Sure.
Simple as that.
You flip the monster on its head?
If it's so weak, you can flip it on its head.
Sweet.
You
flip
like a flump.
You flip the whole idea on its head, so that way you don't have a bunch of 10th level characters that are running around, you know, like gold farmers in World of Warcraft, just bopping kobolds on the head. Ooh. And just going, "Yeah, I'll be up at 12th level pretty soon. I'll just keep hitting these rats." You know, it's a certain point that they just don't get anything for doing it.
Speaking of which, I saw an interesting post that I just saw right before I'm hitting up the show here on Dragon's Foot about someone saying, what if you're in your off time and you take the equivalent of the gold and go train for your next level, even though you don't have the experience points for the next level? Would that be considered training up to your next level? I'm like, why would... That's like working
the
system.
Wait. Say it again. You lost me there. If you did what?
If you... All right, so the article, I'm not going to say who wrote it. Although I'm not actively playing AD&D right now, if anyone is running the R series in Toronto, please PM me. Oh, that gives it away. Too bad. I'm going to pretend that I am a player in an AD&D campaign for this post. Say I have a high-level character, any class, he's level 9. And I have a few thousand dollars, well, silver, gold, whatever, in the bank. Mm-hmm. It's Player's Handbook, page 35. In the Unlimited Adventures, we call this the Vault. Now... The magic user is taking some time to fabricate some items. He's level 12, DMG 116. And besides that, it's winter, so we're all hunkering down until spring so we don't get slaughtered by the WSG. Mm-hmm. My character doesn't have XP to advance yet. DM, again, he puts in parentheses, please look at this from the perspective of running by a book campaign. What would you do if I called... Okay, I withdraw 200,000 silver pieces, 10,000 gold, whatever, from the bank. I find a trainer. I spend the next 4 weeks or so training. Again, please remember, buy the book DM, and my PC doesn't have the required XP for advancement. What do you think?
Easy, no.
Yeah.
I mean, that's easy, because first of all, where did the gold come from? It came from adventuring, so he already earned the XP for that gold, so he can't earn it twice.
Right.
I mean, that's just a cut and dried answer, but it's not a bad question.
Well, it's like a working the system question. When you said World of Warcraft farming, that's what brought that idea to my head, because that's what it's like.
Yeah, I would never allow it. But what I mean, it's a good question. Is it's a good question for us to talk about why gold is even convertible to experience points in the first place. And again, it's right there in the DMG. Addressed, you know, Gary Gygax addressed it, and he said, you might not think that it makes sense to just convert gold to experience points when there's much more realistic ways to do it, and you could, but then your game would turn into a big, long thing where you're describing how you train and how you study and do all these other things that you have to do to prepare, and so it would make for a really boring game. So just accept the fact that when you're adventuring, the treasure you get is sort of a stand-in for the amount of experience you've gotten as you go along. So it's not that getting gold somehow makes you more experienced. It's not that you're experienced because you're a wealthy adventurer. It's just a way of keeping score.
I have to disagree to a point.
Ooh, okay, go ahead.
Because I have never used gold for experience points, ever.
At all?
Okay.
Never done it. My reasoning behind it, I guess this is where I disagree with Gygax's feelings, is I don't see how logically monetary items like gold or what have you can be translated into experience points. To me, it doesn't sound very logical. But then again,
well,
we're talking about we're talking about a game of fairy dragons and orcs, so it's logical in that respect. But I've never done it.
The thing is, you get less XP then. So let's say that's why
I like that, because I don't want my players shooting up experience points, shooting up in levels too fast. I think it's a billion gold pieces of gold then. So I do not. I have never used gold for experience points. The only way my players ever got experience points for, you know, like we talked about, for, you know, defeating monsters, certain individual rewards, and magic items recovered. They figured out what they were, and they get the XP value.
I've never given
experience points for coinage, and I've never had a problem with it.
Well, I mean, if you're going to put it that way, in terms of saying that you know that they're going to advance slower because of it, and that that's intentional, then I get it.
I just think with the XP to gold ratio and how it's used, I just think you're going to advance way too quick.
Well, I don't think I've ever had anybody complain that they were advancing too quickly to enjoy the game. Not in any of my games anymore.
No.
But that's fair enough. I mean, I wouldn't have any trouble coming into your campaign if you said, listen, you're not getting XP for the gold. That's the rule. Okay, that's cool. I just don't need it to be a logical thing for me to accept it in there. Because there's got to be some way to say, you only put as much treasure in as is appropriate if you're designing your modules, your adventures properly. So I just see it as one of those places where you're reminded that it's a game and you're keeping score.
Right.
You can always change the ratio, too, if you don't want to do one for one.
Yeah. Well, I just don't want to deal with all that bookwork either. And I don't think we've ever had a problem with people advancing at a decent, you know, a halfway decent pace, you know.
You can definitely shorten the amount of gold that's in the campaign. You can do those kind of things. I don't know. As far as, you know, keeping score in the gold, the important thing about it is that when a situation comes up that you've got somebody who's kind of being a munchkin and they're trying to game the system, they're trying to say, well, I'm going to loan this gold to that person, or I'm going to, you know, do this with it, or I'm going to get gold this way and get experience for it that way, or whatever. I can't even think of a good devious thing they would do because my mind doesn't automatically go that way. But you can just put the kibosh on it right there by saying, this isn't about one gold piece equaling one experience point. This is about me keeping track of how fast your character is advancing, and he's just not advancing as fast as you think he is, no matter how many games you play with the coinage.
And that's funny, because that would not even come into the equation in the campaign I run, because we don't even use gold for XP. So it's like, I'm going to do this with this gold so I can get experience points. You can go right on ahead, but you're not going to get any, because that's not how we do it. So
if you don't play with it, there's no point to it. All right, so we did the gold, we did that. How about extra XP for role-playing characters? Did you reward those players?
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely, I do.
In the same sentence, should you take it away for people that just sit there and go, I stab? And play on their phone?
I wouldn't go away.
Well, what about the people that play on their phone and they're like, I attack, I fall.
They just won't get as much.
I mean, that's the thing. Is if they see everybody else advancing faster than them, especially when somebody looks up and suddenly realizes everybody else is 9th level and I'm 6, and they start complaining about it, that's when you say, listen, you're not playing the way they're playing. If you want to get more experience points, put your phone away.
You know,
stop listening
to
RFI podcast.
We're talking about experience points for role-playing and for other, you know, individual awards. I guess role-playing could kind of go into this. I know this is going into another system, but I think it could pertain here and might be useful for AD&D.
What's that?
For the the previous version of Hackmaster, the fourth edition rules.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, no.
I think this could work for even AD&D, and I think I'm going to try it because when I start all AD&D campaign,
okay.
is
tell
there is a really good chart on there on the GM screen
mm-hmm.
that has all different types of XP values for. You know, could be for different classes, and when we're talking about role playing, it's based off of like maybe it's like 50 experience points times the level of the character or something like that. Or,
you mean it spells out specific things that the player might do?
Uh huh.
Like yeah. what? Like using a voice? Like
well,
not using player knowledge. What?
Can we pause it and I could get back? I could grab the referee screen.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, here's like the chart where they have like for, it, like for individual class awards, what they call precision cutting, which would be like 3 critical hits. That'd be like 100 experience points times the level of the character if you're a fighter class.
That's cool.
Clerics getting experience points for healing. Mm-hmm. That's one way of doing it. Like when you do a curing spell, it's 1 experience point per point healed.
Okay, what about the role-playing you were saying, though?
Yeah.
Well, there is on the chart here, there's like common individual awards, like for MVP.
What do you base it off of, though? We're asking more.
I guess the point is you could come up with whatever you want to base it off of, but the concept of doing it, I like the idea of having something that's predictable for the players. So, I mean, not to the point that they think, I know all I have to do is speak in an accent and I'm going to get 50 experience points.
Well, here we go. It says player role plays his character well. And there's a couple of asterisks for this. It says award can be greater if the player sacrifices some game advantage to role play in his character, i.e. a noble fighter refusing a substantial reward because it would not be in his character. You know, that's an example. So, and that's like 100 to 200 experience points per the level of the character. So,
and that's exactly the kind of thing I think you should reward for. Things like, especially anytime the player does something that helps his fellow characters rather than himself. Something very, something noble and sacrificing, or not going. Well, I mean, I know if you're playing evil characters.
Yeah, if you're playing evil characters, that doesn't work too well, so.
But
experience points off that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even if you are, and this isn't so much about the characters in the game as the players playing it, because it's really easy when you're all sitting around a table to worry about advancing yourself, but everybody has more fun when one of the other players just does something to help them out, just creating that bond between the players and the group and making sure everybody has a good time. That should be as much a goal of your game as anything else, is making sure that everybody has a good time.
And I remember there was a bit of a debate on, I think, our Dragon's Foot about this. Mm-hmm. Like, if you give experience point awards for role-playing or other, class... based actions, well, what do you gauge that on? I was just thinking of these couple of charts on this GM screen, mm-hmm. and I think that would be just at least a good guideline, a good base to go by, and I think it could still translate to AD&D first edition. I think it still could pertain to that.
I think that's a great way to do it, so if DM's discretion should be enough for most mm-hmm. people. I certainly see why somebody would find it easier to have a chart in front of them, though. And it's nice to know you can pick up the GM screen from Hackmaster 4th edition, you said?
Yeah, it was the previous one. You could probably get them for cheap now, either at like the cons or stuff like that, for like less than $5. It's a huge
I don't think
screen
anybody
too.
Ever needs to have an excuse to buy a new piece of gaming material. No, so, really.
And it's a huge screen. It's like got flip charts at the wazoo.
Yeah. and the other thing is, if anytime we're talking about independent publishers, it's Kenzerco that publishes it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, anytime you're talking about independent publishers like Kenzerco and being able to throw a little money their way and support them and get the cool stuff they do, you're making the whole hobby better overall. So,
yeah.
Go buy it,
Yeah. You can find it all somewhere pretty cheap.
All right. So, Jason, what do you do with your – how do you reward your players with the role play? Do you just –
Well, nothing.
He doesn't. He's mean.
He's mean. That's right.
Yeah, I really – I don't have like a standard
really?
Approach to it, and it doesn't happen that often. It's more of an MVP kind of thing. And now that we're talking about it, I realize it might be better to start you know, having little awards. And I don't mean literally, although that could be kind of cool too. But, you know, when you go to a con – since we're about to go to a con, people often at the end of a game, they'll hand out some awards at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has a good time with that, you know, whether they got a cool 20-sided die or they got a little mini or something because they were the they had the best death in, at a trap, or they, you know, had the most imaginative way to take down a monster or whatever. If at the end of each game, if you have that, I bet that would be a ton of fun. So...
the best.
Maybe I'll try that out.
The best
Speaking
William Shatner
of that,
death.
The most awesome character death, 300 mm-hmm. experience points per character for the character level.
Perfect. Wow. What was it, Vince?
The best,
we're out the screen.
I just said the best William Shatner death.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah. If any character happens to notice that one of the monsters is wearing a red shirt and remembers to take him out first, extra experience points.
Yeah, definitely. I do... do a lot of experience points based on role playing. I actually give players more experience points for acting things out. If they say they describe their methods, if they describe their death, if they have a fumble, instead of me describing it, they say they want to describe it, I give them more experience points for that.
That makes sense, yeah.
I also give extra experience points at the end overall for the MVP, like Jason said, the MVP, but I also do a secret ballot vote in the group that the group decides who gets the extra 50 experience points for the best role player of the day.
That's cool.
I let them decide.
We do that too in our group. We do it all secret ballot. And I think that's something we picked up when we went to conventions. If you go into certain games like AD&D or what have you, at least the experience I've had is like when you vote for MVP of the party, it's always been secret ballot. And we just took that into our home game now.
So
it works pretty well.
That's how Joe did most of his stuff, and then I just expanded upon it. I have my own little chart whenever I play, so...
The legendary Joe?
The legendary Joe. Where he be, I not know. Oh, that was bad.
Anyway, we need to find out.
Well, taken away 10 experience points.
Yeah, it's taken away.
For bad roleplay.
Like the movie The Gamers, just because of that, you just lose 50 experience points. Sorry, you have to watch the movie for that line, but anyway. Yeah, the Great Joe is somewhere in New York roaming around, probably still with his backpack and first edition books, running around from park to park playing with new people. So we'll head into our next segment of the night.
Dragon's Hoard.
So the Dragon's
Time
Hoard.
For some relics.
Yeah. Since we got into the topic of talking about the Spear of Destiny, as we called it last week, in the Adventure Construction set, that doesn't really, it just rolls off my tongue weird, but anyway. I know you had that in your head, but it just rolls off weird. But
Adventure Construction set.
Yeah, it just rolls off weird. And then I was looking through the book, and I was like, ooh, why don't we talk about the Hand and the Eye of Vecna?
Cool. Yeah, so this is a pretty cool thing. We're going to get into some stuff that you're probably not going to use too often because it's ridiculously rare artifacts and relics, so when it actually appears, that's going to be a major turning point in any game.
Oh yeah, you hit that on the head.
So,
or in the eye or the hand in this case.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, let's see, how about I'll start off with the eye and one of you guys take the hand.
Yep.
So to speak. Give me a hand here. The Eye of Vecna. These are just evil things. I mean, at this point, I know that at later times, you know, after first edition, that Vecna actually sort of changed a little bit. But at this point, Vecna is this completely mythical. I can't ever say the word. If it's lich or lick. I can't say it.
Lich is right.
Lich.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lich is correct.
Who, before being completely destroyed and banished from the Prime Material Plane or whatever it is that's happened to Vecna, there's two pieces of his, for lack of a better word, body that were left behind of the Prime Material Plane, and one of them is his eye. And if you do come across the eye of Vecna, it's going to glow like some sort of, it says like a feral creature. I don't really know how a feral creature's eyes glow, except maybe at night, you know, when you see a wolf in the darkness and there's light reflected off of his eyes, that type of a thing.
Probably what he was meaning by that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Maybe a red glow? Who knows?
Yeah.
A red glow. Well, like an agate, it says. Yeah. But the way that you have to use this is it has to be pressed into the empty eye socket of a living creature before it can be. So right off the bat, you're not going to have a paladin accidentally wielding the Eye of Vecna. I mean, someone has to recognize this. Their evil has to be so great that they're willing to pull out their own eye and shove the Eye of Vecna into the empty eye socket in order to gain its powers. And at that point, it's instantly irrevocably. You can't get it out. It's grafted. It's grafted to the head. Cannot be removed or harmed without slaying the character. So, once it's in, it's in. And of course, this being a relic, an artifact, the powers that it has are things that the DM's going to have to come up with. We could, you know, maybe talk about some of those things at the end, but just right off the bat, you know, we're dealing with some evil things with an eye, with a magic item that has to be pressed into your own empty eye socket.
That's a pretty nasty thing to want to do to yourself, to desperately get this awesomely artifact in your eye, so...
Yeah.
It ruins your character, pretty much.
And then there's the hand, yeah. I mean, the hand's even worse. I mean, if you thought the eye was nasty...
It's nasty.
Well, compared to other magic items in the book, it doesn't have that many, you know, special abilities, per se. But when you get to the hand and you get both of them, oh, boy. That, and this one goes into detail about Vecna. They call him an archlich, which... begs me the question, maybe we should come up with the archlich as far as like a different type of monster. We got the demi-lich, we got the lich, how about an archlich?
It doesn't beg the question. It raises the question. Begging the question is circular. Begging the question is a circular argument. It means a logical fallacy. It means that you're saying that something is something because it is. Don't make me send you to begsthequestion.info to fix that one. I'm on a quest to fix that phrase around the world. Back to the podcast.
And now back to our regularly scheduled podcast.
Are you done?
Do we have...
I'll never be finished trying to fix people's usage of the phrase.
It was an accident. It was a slip of the tongue to use that particular phrase. But anyway, it got me wondering on, you know, maybe we should make up an archlich, you know, monster, you know, make up some stats for that. But, you know,
I smell an article for Todd.
The what?
I smell an article for Todd to be writing.
There you go.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is that Vecna's never really supposed to show up. I mean, right. Vecna's supposed to be so powerful that he doesn't show up in the game. But if you wanted to have a campaign that Vecna was in, I mean, that would really be the great thing that everybody's going towards at the end.
Yeah.
Well, do we have a little history of Vecna? You guys know a little history about Vecna at all, or
I really don't.
All right.
Not really. Besides what's in the DMG.
Well, if you run to the Wikipedia,
yeah.
In the world of Greyhawk, a campaign setting for D&D role playing game, Vecna was a powerful wizard who became a lich. Someone uses evil magical power to allow his or her continue blah 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 blah. He was eventually destroyed, and his left hand and left eye were the only parts of his body to survive. Even after the achieved godhood, being a member of the third edition's default pantheon of D&D gods, blah blah blah, he is still described as missing both the holy symbol, his left palm, blah 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 blah.
Right.
Didn't really actually give Mitch much history about it. He was part of the Dragonlance setting for a while. Mm-hmm. And he is actually still currently used in the later editions that shall not be named.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's kind of where I was going before, is that I know that from reading about it, that Vecna takes a bigger role in some of the campaigns.
Right.
But I don't know
like
much about
him. I'd see him as like a legendary figure. I would hate to see
it. I like Vecna being not there.
Kind of obscure, yeah. But you know, a little bit more on the hand.
Yeah.
It's like a mummified hand, blackened and shriveled. if the wrist portion is pressed against the stump of a forearm, instantly graft to that area, and that limb will have 18 double aught strength. But you won't
get first of all, it presupposes that your forearm is a stump.
Well, that's where
that's where it gets nasty.
Right. But you won't get the to hit and damage bonus for 18 double aught, which is kind of weird. And but the hand will eventually turn the alignment to the host character to neutral evil, as explained hereafter. So basically, what it really gets down to is there's different ways you can use its powers, like if you make a fist, or if you point your finger, or you stick out your thumb, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the cool part it leaves up to the DM, is you can come up with the different hand gestures that you have to do.
And when it says in the description, when a primary power, and then get this, 10 of them, this thing has, yeah, 10 primary powers, I think it has? Yeah.
Really?
No, wait, or is it one?
I'm turning back to look. Yeah, no, it has 10 minor benign powers.
All right. But one primary, I'm sorry. Well, it uses its primary power. The user will instantly become neutral evil, and then it says after that, very evil.
Well, yeah, I like that.
How much more evil than neutral evil can you be? You know,
what alignment is your character? Oh, he's neutral, very evil.
Yes. Yeah.
He's VE, very evil.
Yes.
NVE, neutral, very evil.
Let's go to the powers of a relic for a minute, because I think it's worth revisiting what it really means to have an artifact or a relic, how it's different from a magic item, a regular magic item. So, and this is where, you know, it's the fun of charts, so to speak, but they aren't really charts. I mean, you're not rolling on these, because the whole point is for the DM to look and select. Them, yeah. You know, but you're looking here, and each of these has a number of minor and major benign powers, minor and major malevolent effects. The prime powers that you're talking about, and so that's where it gets up to things like, you know, being able to plane shift, or to have a death ray, or trap the soul, which sounds like actually would be pretty appropriate for an artifact of a lich. And then there's always side effects, you know, that come in as well. So you go through and you want to actually pick out the ones that make the most sense for that relic, which is, you know, a lot of the fun of doing this. What sounds really fun about the Hand of Vecna is that since the different powers and effects that it has can be based on how you move your hand, if you want to talk about giving the player some role-playing to do, get them to learn the different motions.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
I think it'd be a lot of fun. Be like, I'm going to use Prime Power C. No, you're not. Do the motion. I don't want to do that one. It's embarrassing. Do the motion.
Sorry.
But that one makes me stick my middle finger. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Well, there was one thing about this item that really stuck out for me, because it's all in caps in the description.
It
says, nothing short of intervention from the most powerful of gods can alter the effects of Vecna's hand upon its host.
So no wish spell, you think?
Well, you need god intervention on this case.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
It's like a god call, you know?
Yeah, no Odin, no help.
That's right.
Yeah.
No Zeus? Sorry, buddy.
Yeah, that wish isn't going to get you anywhere.
No, nope, so.
Poor Vecna. What I like about these artifacts is that you can actually put the things in there you want them to do.
It'll be different per campaign.
Yeah, I like how it's a custom magic item or a custom artifact for every campaign. Well, it shouldn't be actually thrown into any campaign, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing, is if you're going to use artifacts and relics in a campaign, there really shouldn't be more than one, maybe two or three if you can kind of dampen them down a little bit, but really shouldn't be more than one artifact, because if anything, that would be kind of the hook that your whole storyline is revolving around.
Right. I remember there was one artifact, because people like to hear stories about like how people make up their own artifacts out of the book, not out of the book.
Yeah, yeah.
The great Joe DM, as we referred him to, he had a campaign that was called the Quest for the Swords of Alignment, And each alignment had their own specific sword. And we were supposed to quest for them before there was this Death Knight that was questing for all the swords. Because if you put the swords together, you can control just about any person with any alignment. And you were able to do special damage. He didn't actually go into the stats of it. Because we weren't supposed to know. We were supposed to find it. But we only found up half the swords. But if you had that alignment and you wielded that sword, you were able to get special abilities and bonus to your statistics and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So it was kind of like one of those. I guess you probably got based it off of a He-Man thing. Because remember He-Man? When you put the two swords together, it formed one great sword. I think you get based
actually,
it off of that.
You know what? That sounds very similar to. I think it was in the Adventure Temple of Elemental Evil.
Was it?
There's a sword like that. And I think. I have to look this up to be sure, but I'm almost certain there's a sword like that. And it goes in the description. They're called like the Swords of Recall or something like that.
Swords of Recall.
Something of that nature. But there's like 9 different swords, each of a different alignment.
Oh.
But these sound a lot more powerful. What Joe was doing.
Well, yeah, his were more on the level of like way up there in the 20s. So.
Right, right. His were actual artifacts. These were kind of like there was like +3 broadswords or bastard swords or something like that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Very interesting.
So Vecna. I was thinking about the Iron Hand of Vecna.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Is I don't know how much you guys read Knights of the Dinner Table.
No.
There was a strip a long time ago that was based off of this. It was called the Hand of Vectra. They call it the Hand of Vectra.
Uh-huh.
Now, the four players in the group, and then there's the DM. They're on this quest. They find the Hand of Vectra, and one of the guys grabs the thing off the pillar and says, I'm chopping off my hand. The Hand of Vectra is mine. Mm-hmm. And the DM goes, okay, smarty pants, which hand do you chop off? The left one. No. The right. No, left. I chop off my right one. And he goes, ha-ha, you're wrong. It's the left.
It doesn't and it, fit.
And it goes on from there. It is hilarious. And it's so good that... And if you get the chance to go to it, because they have it at Gen Con, they do live readings of the KODT strips.
Oh, okay, cool.
Okay, let's look for that.
Yes, definitely.
Friday or Saturday night, you gotta go. And they almost always do the Hand of Vector strip. It is hilarious.
Right,
and at the very end, he goes, I don't have the heart to tell them what's going to happen when they go look for the Head of Vectra. So.
Yeah. Speaking of that, we can transition into later editions. They had the Robes of Vecna, and didn't Hackmaster have the Head of Vecna?
No, they didn't, but they converted it to Vectra, and they still had the Eye in the Hand, I believe. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I want to get the Hand of Vectrex.
Vectrex.
Yeah, get the Power Glove of Vectrex.
I think the heart too.
Oh, well, this is getting silly now. He's just leaving pieces everywhere.
I know. How's this guy going to survive?
It'd be really good if there was a lot of inns and taverns all along the way to where it was reputed to be, and they all had themes about hands.
Mmm.
Ah, pilgrimages and relics and things.
Yeah.
Yada, yada, yada. Yeah. And I know the last update on Vecna was they made him a lesser god, so...
Oh.
Yeah.
I'll just have the relic, please.
I'll just get the typical meh.
Yeah. One eye, please. Thank you.
One eye. That's enough for me. Thank you. Neutral evil. Very evil. Thank you.
Yes.
Was that quasi evil? No.
Quasi evil.
All right. Well, tell us how if you've used Vecna. Well, not Vecna himself. I mean, the eye or hand of Vecna, or maybe you have used Vecna himself inside your campaign. Tell us a little bit about rfistaff@gmail.com. I think I'll take a look-see and post up some information of background history of Vecna on the site, because that's kind of interesting after I was reading it, his whole history, so might be a good article. Let's go into our creature feature this week.
Creature, creature, feature, feature, theater, theater, theater.
All right. Creature Feature Theater, which, by the way, Jason, I like that. I like the bumper for Creature Feature Theater that you did.
Oh. We're hearing
it's
it now.
It's spooky. Oh.
Yeah, so, I need to make sure we credit, by the way. I'm going to make sure this is up on the website. All the music that we have on our show, it comes in part from a guy named Kevin McLeod, who has amazing website. We should really we'll put a link up to him, because if anybody needs music for their own podcasts, or if you're doing films or anything like that, he just sits there and makes film scores like all day long and just gives them away.
Yeah, Kevin, you're a swell guy.
I think the only thing he says, you have to just credit him back, and that's all he cares about.
Yeah, yeah. And well, the thing is, so if anybody who's listening to the show, you know, is involved with things like dramatic readings, like you were saying, Julie works with does the audio dramas, or if you're doing films or anything, this guy Kevin McLeod will also do commissions. You know, if you want something done specifically for it. So I think that's kind of why he gives away stuff, is to get his name out there. For commissions, so look him up.
Sounds like an awesome guy.
Yeah.
So our topic this week was, it's IncomeTech, IncomeTech.com is where his website is.
IncomeTech?
Yes.
IncomeTech?
IncomeTech or something, yeah.
Like incompetent, IncomeTech. It's kind of cute.
IncomeTech.
Yeah. Julie had given me that address for his website because I was looking for it the other day. Anyway,
cool. So
a goblin creatures. Spider. Goblin spider does whatever a goblin spider can do. As we heard last week. Yeah, I know.
That's another 50 experience points lost.
Dull.
We're going to try what we talked about, what somebody on the forums had suggested was do a little bit of gameplay and then come back and talk about the monster next time.
So the goblin spider, Mathis had died almost.
Yeah, now it's next time.
Not quite dead.
Nobody sent potions in. Hopefully no one went to Mathis.com.
Yeah.
So we found some. We found out a lot more about the goblin spider since encountering it last week. Yeah.
Jason, you had some great history about that you sent us.
Yeah, just completely kind of by accident. So was looking online.
This is like Japanese legend, you say?
Well, okay, so I was looking online and I found an old fairy tale book called The Goblin Spider that was translated into English back in 1899. Apparently, Lafcadio Hearn is pretty well known. I showed this to my fiance. She was actually born in Japan, and so she was like, "Oh, Lafcadio Hearn, yeah, he wrote all these children's books," or he translated them. And so she did a little bit of looking around. And it's actually pretty interesting. The goblin spider, so it's called, I'm going to get pronunciations bad, I have to go a little slow, but Tsuchigumo is another word for the goblin spider. And what she knew...
Tsuchigumo, you said?
Tsuchigumo.
Tsuchigumo, okay.
Yeah, goblin spider.
Yes, yes, yes.
I pronounce it goblin spider. But anyways, the Tsuchigumo, in stories, they are it's another name for a rogue samurai who didn't believe in serving the emperor.
Okay.
And so they could also be vengeful. So the vengeful spirits of these rogue samurai, these Tsuchigumo,
goblin spider,
would be goblin spiders that would roam the countryside. But here's where it gets kind of interesting. So I was reading more about it. Not only is Tsuchigumo the name for rogue samurais who don't believe in serving the emperor, it's also a word because, you know, it was a word that was used sort of pejoratively. You know, they were persecuted and they were, you know, treated badly. So they were, the same word was used for them that was used for bandits and thieves. And not like a typical thief, but like the kind that are highwaymen and robbers and, you know, just the ones that are outside of society and everything.
Brigands.
In the Riggins. And but then the word gets even more interesting, because when I started digging around, it's also the word goes back to the Ainu. And the Ainu are the people that were in Japan before the Japanese. They live still in Hokkaido. The Ainu are sort of the aboriginal peoples of Japan. And they had a word for them also, and they called them Koropokuru, which is instead of being bandits and thieves, these Koropokuru were dwarves that lived underground. And in the Oriental Adventures that I look back in, there was that same word, Koropokuru, is actually a playable race.
Right,
so they're kind of all it starts out with what turns out was actually a real thing. Because you guys remember how a few months ago they discovered, or maybe it was longer, but a while back, there was a discovery of a race of hobbits in Indonesia.
I heard about that.
Yeah.
There was something big in the news about that. Yeah.
Yeah, Flores Man, I think they called it, because they found it on the island of Flores. Well, apparently, these legends that the Ainu have about these little dwarves that lived underground, turns out that they've actually found archaeological digs of underground caverns that had tiny people living in them in that area. Basically, there really were hobbits living underground in Hokkaido in Japan. So this just goes completely full circle. There really were tiny dwarves that lived underground, and now, you know, in the game we've got these spirits.
You know what this means?
No.
Tolkien was right.
Completely right. And that would really drive Gary Gygax nuts, because he didn't really like Tolkien.
No,
no. No, he didn't.
So if Tolkien was right,
that means 2012 might be right. Oh, no.
Yeah, but that's a whole different pantheon, so I think we're okay.
Yeah, we talked about the conspiracy show. That was a while ago.
No!
But so anyways, it turns out that this goblin spider was a pretty amazing monster to pick for the creature feature theater, because it's rooted in all kinds of actual history.
See?
And you could put a whole history around it.
I was thinking.
Yeah, you could.
You really were.
I poured through the books. I was sitting there all day. It was hot. I was sweating up in the attic. No, it wasn't really.
And, I don't wonder how hot and sweaty you are, but
yeah.
So this all kind of leads to what makes sense now that I look in the book. So I don't use Oriental Adventures in my campaign at all, and
I don't really either.
For any number of reasons, but I do have a copy. So I was going back and looking through. They don't spin webs. Instead, they make their lairs in tunnels underground, and this is what you were talking about last week, why he was popping up from the trapdoors and everything.
Yeah.
Apparently, this all kind of fits together, because if these goblin spiders are the vengeful spirits of these rogue samurai, and they're tied, etymologically at least, to these dwarves that lived underground in real Japan, it's kind of neat that the goblin spider would also be an underground cave dweller type as well.
Yeah. I was looking through the description on this thing, and I was just floored. This is a very powerful creature.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking, magic resistance 20%. Oh, great. Well, that explains why your sleeps or your command spell didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, for something that's got 6 to 9 hit dice, it seems like you shouldn't judge it only on its hit dice. It's pretty powerful.
Yeah,
it actually is supposed to have companion spiders with it, but I decided to pull those out just for the sake of the segment.
It was a 30% chance.
Go ahead, Jace.
When my character was detecting evil and it was detected all around, is that because there were actually others just in their lairs everywhere?
Yes.
Ugh. Okay, so we were lucky. We only came up against one of them.
They were actually what that one spider was doing. He was scouting you guys out. Is why he was doing.
Okay.
And he was supposed to drag one of you guys back into the lair. If you read the description, I believe it's
closing the door behind them.
Yeah, bringing them inside.
And Vince, why don't you run us through exactly what the goblin spider can do?
Well, the goblin spider can. Let's see. They have two attacks. D8 for each attack. You need a +1 weapon or better to actually hit the creature. And like Nick said, it had a 20% magic resistance. It did have a low intelligence, but it did have the hit dice for Jason's spell, so it did get a save. It is a neutral evil character, and it is a large creature of the 8 to 10 foot range. It has a varying hit dice from 6 to 9, so depending on which one you want to use. Someone going to say something?
Oh, I was just going, whew.
Yeah. And its main attacks are a surprise attack, and it has a grasp, which you know, Nick's
which character Nick discovered.
But
yeah,
it also
which my character discovered.
The one thing it has that I really didn't play up mostly, but you did hear it, was it can mimic voices.
Yeah.
Not yes. really well, but it can mimic voices enough to lure people
like
around.
A parrot.
Yeah.
Because it says it's low intelligence. Well, I guess a parrot's animal intelligence. It's low, so it's smarter. Yeah. But just it can make the sounds, but it doesn't know what it's saying.
They actually say the goblin spies are excellent mimics and are able to imitate any voice or any animal sound they hear. Although when imitating languages they do not understand, they can only repeat the words they have heard or spoken, much like Jason said a parrot does.
Oh, yeah. if it's a language they don't understand.
Yeah, they still can do it. They can, if they don't understand, they just mimic it if they don't understand it. So say, you know, another language, someone says go to the bathroom or something, you can say go to the bathroom, but you won't know what it means. So
okay, right, so if they speak the language, then they right. do know what it means.
Yeah,
yeah. It says in their description, it says they speak their own language, the language of spiders, the trade language, and the language common to the human inhabitants near their lair.
Yeah.
So, okay.
It's as smart as, like, what, an ogre's, like, low intelligence.
Yeah.
So.
And then it says there's a 30% chance that there are 2d4 giant spiders in the immediate vicinity of the goblin spider lair. They help them out, pretty much, and serve the giant spider.
So now, hang on. The when we were fighting it, it says when the goblin spider is gripping a victim, it cannot make any other attack. So did it, I don't remember, did it have to drop Nick before it could attack? Was that the deal?
Remember,
basically, yeah.
What I said was he dropped Nick and then ran towards you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, it sounds like they live in rough wooded mountains. They stay away from humans, but when the humans start invading their lands, or by basically being nearby, then they go on the warpath.
Yeah, I kind of picture these things living in like the Badlands, the kind of outer reaches of a kingdom or society on those borderland regions.
That'd be cool. That makes sense.
All right, well, it's a cool creature, and I thought it'd be something different to do.
You know, we were thinking about like other ways to use this creature.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways I was thinking about, this is because I'm a devious DM like you, and I was thinking underground, and maybe like a bridge that goes over like a pit.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And there are all these hidey holes up like in the ceiling, just out of view of the players. And these goblin spiders and maybe their little giant spider minions come out. They have a chance of grabbing the players when they're going across the bridge. You know?
Yep. Billy Goat
and
Gruff.
Tossing them into the pit.
Oh, gee.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
Absolutely.
So I'm like, yeah, that's how I would use these guys. At least one way. They're really nasty. It also makes me wonder, because of all their special abilities, like the magic resistance, plus one or better to hit, I wonder if these things are almost... Maybe they have like a drop of, you know, extra planar blood in there. You know, like maybe like they're kind of like demons in a way.
Well,
if we took them historically and or folklorically, and actually had them as the vengeful spirits of slain samurai or something like that, then you probably would have some extraplanar connection there, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'm just thinking they're almost like demon, like a demon or a devil kind of creature. Just looking at the abilities, so just you know, one of those things that was kind of floating in my head. Maybe if you go to the Abyss or the Nine Hills, maybe you'll see a couple of these goblin spiders there. Who knows?
Hmm. Oh, Mathis sure saw one up close.
Yes, he did. A very up close and personal.
Well, we'll return next week with our new creature feature, but one of the other DMs will be taking over. Who knows at the time? Anyone want to step up?
Who knows? Maybe we'll get somebody at Gen Con to run a creature feature.
Cool. That'd be cool. Three of us can play. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Tell us how you do it, what you do. You know the deal. Let's head into our final segment of the week.
Ooh, one of those electronic voting dealies.
So, poll of the week. Yay, clapping noise.
I didn't know what kind of music a poll would get. I figured you'd applaud it.
Yeah, it worked out good.
Hey, Lake used Homer Simpson.
But that was actually pretty good.
Thank you.
That was actually Homer, not Vince.
No, that was, yeah, whatever. So the poll on the site, yeah, the poll on the site this week is if we, as a podcast, decide to do a live recording of the show, as in record the show and you guys can listen while we record it on, say, possibly Ustream, would you stop by and listen? Well, looks like we had about, the lead so far was about 9 votes so far, because the poll just went up the other day, of people that said yes. And, of course, there's some people that said no, and we won't name those people, Jason. And
I actually voted no.
And there was some maybe. I think it was no, just give me my show like I normally do. I just want to further explain that you will still get your show as you normally do. This just gives the opportunity for some people to sit and comment in the room as we do the show to ask a question or to give us feedback while we're doing the show. So I thought it would be kind of cool to do that maybe once in twice, as you can hear.
We'll see.
Yeah,
yeah. I gotta think about that one. I'm indecisive. I can't decide. It's like I kind of want to do it. I kind of don't. Maybe I should flip a coin. I don't know.
Yeah,
we might try an experiment and see if it goes well or if it goes poorly. If anybody shows up, you never know. So yeah. It's always fun to try new stuff. So we'll see what happens.
We don't want to be that one podcast when we do the live show, that one person there with the sign, "Woo, love you guys," you know, at the concert.
That'd be awesome.
Holding a lighter with a sign.
Like Flight of the Conchords, where they've got just the one fan.
One fan. Jeez.
Love it.
All right. So as you guys probably know, you're probably listening to this podcast as we are at Gen Con, or you might be listening to this after Gen Con. Hello, future people. So, any last-minute thoughts about
like
Gen Con?
In the future?
I don't know. Why don't you drop us a line? What? Any last-minute Gen Con thoughts, guys?
Yes.
So, yeah, go ahead.
I want to go.
We offered to pick you up.
Well, here's the thing. I was talking about like that Mountain Dew throwback. They have the Pepsi stuff, and there's a Dr. Yeah. Pepper one, too.
Okay.
Dr. Pepper Heritage made with sugar. And they're... Like, here it was like a seasonal thing. You would only find it, like, around Christmas time and stuff. But now they got around, like at the end of July, I'm like, it's old school soda pop. So,
yeah,
kind of look at it that way.
So they have it for convention times.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I was trying to connect the dots between that and Gen Con, so.
Bring some to Gen Con.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know what? Honestly, when you go to any convention, you're going to be spending a lot of money on food and drink. Might as well bring your own. I always do.
Yeah, I'm bringing.
Well, I mean, that's the one good thing about Gen Con is it's pretty easy to bring your stuff. I mean, you don't. I'll say this for something that comes only once a year and that everybody looks forward to, and it's this huge thing that people literally come all around the world for. It's surprisingly inexpensive to do.
If you're
staying in a hotel that's not one of the million-dollar downtown hotels, and you know the tickets for Gen Con, I mean, what is it, $50-$60 for the whole 4-day event?
Yeah,
you're buying tickets for the individual stuff, $2 a ticket. That's 2 hours worth of gameplay. I mean, it's really good. I'm glad to see that they keep it at something that everybody can do.
Yeah.
Well, I like the local conventions around me. I mean, they're not as big, but at least you don't get charged for the games themselves.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, they do keep it all up. But, so I'll be driving through. I'll be stopping to see Nick on the way, because it turns out that whether I drive southern or northern, it's the exact same amount of time. So I'm going to cut through the north. I'll stop over there in Streetsboro and Akron and those areas.
Yeah.
You're going to be in, like, Tuesday or Wednesday?
Well, I'm gonna be in Streetsboro Tuesday night, and then I've got to get to, I got to be in Cleveland at 8:30 in the morning on Wednesday.
Oh my God.
Before I go on to Indianapolis, because we've got all the flyers for the show, and they're being printed in Cleveland, so I got to stop over and pick them up.
Okay. And what time were you planning on going on the road then? From there,
I don't know. Super early, and
4 a.m. probably.
Yeah, so Wednesday I'll be getting into Indianapolis, whatever, like 2 p.m. on Wednesday, and then there's even some stuff going on Wednesday. You know, they've got the sort of early bird special, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Origins has the same thing.
Yeah. And then, you know, Thursday morning, 10 a.m., we're going to have the meetup. Anybody who is in town and can make it will come down and meet up. And anybody who doesn't get there in time or whatever else, maybe we'll have some kind of way to stay in touch, because I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to meet all sorts of people that listen to the show or that show up on the different forums that we read.
Can you,
you know,
I meant to ask you, can you get inside there as to actually just go to the bar without actually going to Gen Con itself?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean,
That's part of the hotel, right?
Yeah, we're deliberately not holding the meetup inside of any of the Gen Con areas. You know, this is just a public area within the Gen Con boundaries, but not in any place that you need to have tickets or anything.
Great. So if you're not going to Gen Con, which would be kind of silly because you're right there, but you can still come down and say hi.
Yeah. Yeah. Just come down and say hi. And, you know, we'll be there. We'll be having a blast. We'll be recording sometime during Gen Con. We don't know when yet, but I'm going to be lugging some equipment. So we'll see how that works exactly.
From what you showed me of your equipment, you're lugging some equipment, is right.
Oh my God.
I'm
going to
take it off the rack.
Bring your bag of holding, man.
It's awesome. Yeah, no, I've got all my equipment mounted to a rack unit right now, but I'm just going to, you know, rip it down off of
there. Oh, the rack of holding. Got it.
Yes, the rack of holding. Yeah, all my audio equipment we use for our show is all bolted into this and this custom desk here, so I can't actually bring it. So we're going to have to rely on your equipment this time.
Yeah, it should be all right. I think it should sound good.
Just let me know when you'll be in on Tuesday. We'll try to hook up that night if we can.
Yep, it'll be great.
Stop by, say hi. We all want to see, you know, play some games with everybody. And I think that's going to wrap up the show. What do you guys think?
I guess we'll see everybody at Gen Con, whoever makes it.
I'll be wishing I was at Gen Con.
All right, this is DM Vince signing off for the crew, saying keep it original, keep it old school, and see you at Gen Con. Otherwise, see you next time.
Night, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Night.
Roll for initiative.